Russia pounds Ukraine's capital and other cities with missiles in retaliation for a bombing of a Russian bridge to Russian-occupied Crimea. A reporter in Kyiv tells us what it was like when the missiles hit.
Everything was shaking, basically. The apartment itself, the windows, and of course, me and my husband, we immediately went to the shelter, to the bomb shelter.
Plus, a former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine tells VOA what he thinks is behind Russian President Vladimir Putin's escalation of aggression.
Without a good strategy for winning on the battlefield, indeed losing on the battlefield as he is now, he's going to try to cause terror.
Today is Monday, October 10th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Michael Lippin, filling in for Steve Miller. Ukraine's military says Russia launched a barrage of 75 missiles on Monday, hitting at least 10 different areas of the country. Most of the attacks on Kyiv hit the city center, killing several people. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky responded to the attacks in a video that he recorded outside the presidential office. It's a hard morning, he said, adding, we are dealing with terrorists, dozens of missiles, and Iranian-made Shahed combat drones. Zelensky said the Russians have two targets, Ukrainian energy facilities and the Ukrainian people. Russian President Putin, speaking in a video call with his Security Council, called it a massive strike in response to Saturday's destructive attack on the bridge linking Crimea to the Russian mainland. If the attempts to carry out terrorist attacks on our territory continue, he said, Russia's responses will be tough and proportionate to the level of threats posed to the Russian Federation. No one should have any doubts about this. Ukrainian reporter Anna Chernikova was in Kyiv when Monday's Russian strikes began. I spoke to her earlier and asked what it was like to experience the first Russian bombardment of the Ukrainian capital in months.
The first explosion was heard at around 8:20 in the morning. So I was at home and it was a very powerful explosion that happened. It was not far from my apartment building. So everything was shaking, basically. The apartment itself, the windows, and of course, me and my husband, we immediately went to the shelter, to the bomb shelter. We are quite lucky. We have an underground parking in our apartment building. So all our neighbors and we as well, we were there for all these 5 hours because the attack, this bombardment basically was happening for 5.5 hours in a row. And I should say that it was not just one explosion. It was a series of explosions, and it was a little delay and another series of explosions. And for all this time, different kind of explosions were heard. So sometimes we were hearing some really powerful sounds, and sometimes sounds of air defense missiles working in the air and destroying the missiles that were targeting the city.
So were you able to get outside eventually, and what did you see?
Well, yeah. So the attacks, the missiles hit the central part of the city, very, very central part of Kyiv. Some of the victims were in their cars on the way to work when the missile hit one of the sites. So people died inside of their cars. What I've seen that most of the attacks were targeting critical infrastructure. This is first of all. Second of all, the areas in the city center where a lot of civilians were concentrated in this point of time, because this early in the morning, people either were at home or were on their way to work.
What have you learned about the impact of these strikes elsewhere?
Again, mostly it's critical infrastructure. So if we look in the west, north, south, and east, because all the regions were affected, the main target was critical infrastructure. So now there are troubles with electricity and water supply in the areas. For instance, the city of Lviv, 90% of the city has no electricity for the moment. And even now, air raid alarm is not working because there is no electricity. So there is a vehicle going around the town informing people that there is a missile scare. Probably it's important to say that for the moment we know that over 80 people were wounded due to these attacks and injured. Some of them are in the hospitals. Dozens, unfortunately, were killed. More than 10. This is what we have for the moment around the country. But unfortunately, the numbers, of course, could change and could rise. So we'll keep an eye on that.
Reporter Anna Chernikova in Kyiv, thank you for bringing us up to date, and we'll be in touch with you again soon.
Thank you, Michael.
U.S. President Joe Biden issued a statement strongly condemning the Russian missile strikes, which he said once again demonstrate the utter brutality of Putin's illegal war on the Ukrainian people. Biden said the U.S., its allies and partners will continue to impose costs on Russia for its aggression, hold Putin and Russia accountable for atrocities and war crimes, and provide the support necessary for Ukrainian forces to defend their country and their freedom. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg tweeted his own condemnation of what he described as Russia's horrific and indiscriminate attacks on civilian infrastructure in Ukraine. Stoltenberg said the NATO alliance will continue supporting what he called the brave Ukrainian people's fight against Kremlin aggression for as long as it takes. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen was on a visit to Estonia and had this comment on the Russian strikes as she stood beside the Estonian Prime Minister.
I am shocked and appalled by the vicious attack on Kyiv and other Ukrainian cities. Russia once again has shown to the world what it stands for. It is terror and brutality. Those who are responsible have to be held accountable. We are mourning the victims, and I send my heartfelt condolences to our Ukrainian friends. I know Ukrainians will not be intimidated, and Ukrainians know that we will stand by their side as long as it takes.
William Taylor is a former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine who now serves as a vice president at the U.S. Institute of Peace in Washington. VOA Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gongadze spoke with Taylor and asked him what kind of game Putin is trying to play by bombarding Ukraine.
So Miroslava, the Putin game's hard to figure out, of course. No one really knows what's in his head. What we do know is he's desperate. He's losing on the battlefield, as you indicate. He's losing allies. He's losing support at home. He doesn't have the support of even his right wing. So Mr. Putin is in trouble, and he's looking for some way to get himself out of that. So this attack, all these missiles that are fired at various cities, at civilian targets, like playgrounds, like bridges, and like apartments and homes. All these attacks are, yes, in response to the attack on the bridge, but they're probably what he was going to do anyway as winter approaches. That is, without a good strategy for winning on the battlefield, indeed losing on the battlefield as he is now, he's going to try to cause terror. These are terrorist attacks that we're seeing here today. So that's not a great strategy, but that's all he has left.
Ukrainians are asking to actually designate Russia as a terrorist state, and those calls were very loud today. And they are asking to provide air defense system and long-range missiles for Ukraine. What kind of swift action is needed today from United States and international community?
The international community and the United States in the lead must redouble its support for Ukraine, and that means redouble its weapons, redouble the ammunition, redouble the sanctions. I mean, as I said, this attack today, these missile attacks today, are terrorist attacks. President Putin is leading a terrorist state that is terrorizing Ukraine. So the international community needs to recognize that. I think many have already. The international community needs to increase the weapons and the weight and the range and the capabilities of those weapons. Needs to do that now, taking these weapons out of stock, not out of manufacturing lines, but out of stock so they can be delivered right away. And continue to keep the sanctions on and to increase the sanctions and increase the effectiveness of the export controls, which keeps the electronic components necessary for the Russians to replace their missiles. The Russians now are running out of these missiles that they are firing, and they can't replace them because they can't get the components in the volumes that they need in order to replace these. So the international community needs to redouble its efforts in response to these attacks.
And the last question, what kind of effect this escalation will have on the course of the war, you think?
What I hear from my Ukrainian friends is that these attacks will further enrage Ukrainians, increase the determination to win this war. Ukrainians know they're going to win this war. They are winning this war. These attacks enrage Ukrainians. They enrage the world. They enrage the West. Americans are enraged by these attacks. So what this will do will be increase the determination on the part of Ukrainians that I talk to, but certainly also on the part of the United States, to support Ukraine so that Ukraine will win this war.
Thank you so much, Ambassador Taylor.
Thank you, Miroslav.
For more updates on the war throughout the day, visit voanews.com/flashpoint. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Michael Lippin. In the weeks prior to Monday's Russian strikes on Ukraine, Russian state television had been broadcasting some critical comments about the struggling Russian war effort. In this second part of my interview with Russia media analyst Maxim Alyukov of King's College London, I asked him about the significance of those critical narratives that had appeared recently on state TV.
In terms of critical narratives, they're actually very rare. So sometimes, especially when you are on Twitter or social media or follow the news, you have this impression that it's actually something happening at a large scale. It's not actually true. So these critical voices are rare. They sometimes appear during talk shows, but not very often. And so these are basically their responses to challenges, and they appear less often than it seems.
What kind of response has there been from the Russian public when these critical views are shared on, you know, a state TV show? Do you get any sense that the Russian public is shocked by what they hear? Or are they happy to hear finally a critical viewpoint?
I would not say that they're shocked, because we know that people don't fully trust official information about the war. So according to polls, we know that one third of Russians, they actually report that they fully trust official information about the war, and the rest of them, they either don't trust it or question some of the ideas presented on television. So the trust is actually quite low, and that's why I think for many people it's actually clear that things are not going according to plan in Ukraine, and that's why this news are not really shocking. We see, according to all survey data, an increase in anxiety and all kinds of negative emotions around Ukraine. So people think that the operation is not going according to plan, express concerns. That's something we obviously detect, especially now in September and October. But I would not say it's a sort of a shock for people, because for many it was clear for quite a while that things are not as successful as presented on television.
What do you think the reporting of Russian state media about the war in the recent days and weeks, what does it say about the unity or not of the Russian elite? Are we starting to see some fractures there?
That's a very tricky question. I think it's very tempting idea to look at Russian political talk shows in the news and try to predict what's happening within the elite. I don't think it's possible to do, because it's important to understand it's a personalist authoritarian regime, meaning that very few people within a very narrow circle around Putin actually know what's happening, right? So remember the very beginning of the invasion when Putin announced it, right? So it was very clear from this staged kind of shows by Putin that even his own ministers around him, they were not really happy with the invasion, were not really aware. So I don't really think that people like Soloviev or other TV hosts, they know what's going on within the elite. So they might, you know, sense some tensions, but they definitely will not show these tensions to the public. Another important issue here to understand is that these shows are actually a form of entertainment too. So these are theatrical shows with all kinds of crazy, scandalous ideas. Sometimes Soloviev is talking about nuking London before they had even more scandalous ideas and scandalous kind of acts and behaviors. So it's also a way to attract the audience, to spread propaganda, to make it attractive, to make it entertaining. So I'm kind of skeptical about this idea of trying to use this political talk shows to trace some cracks within the elite.
Just one more question about Russian state news sites. There have also been some critical comments about the conduct of the war expressed in Russian newspapers. How significant is that?
Well, there is a lot of criticism, again, regarding the implementation. So poor planning, equipment. So they're looking for people who are responsible, maybe some specific generals. Now, many sort of commentators discuss this idea that Shoigu, who is the Minister of Defense, might be a scapegoat for Putin because he needs to shift the blame and find a person who is responsible for the failures. This is definitely tell us something about how operation is going on, right? But I would not say that it poses, at this point in time, it poses a significant risk to the stability of the regime.
Well, Maxim Alyukov, research fellow at King's College London, will keep an eye on that issue. Thanks so much for talking to Flashpoint Ukraine.
Thanks. Thank you for inviting me.
3 months ago on this program, I spoke to a Ukraine-based executive for U.S. tech company Just Answer about its progress in funding the construction of a new mental health center in the western Ukrainian city of Lviv. I spoke again with Andriy Chemez last week, when the mental health center opened, to get his first impressions of the facility.
Well, first of all, everything looked so new, because, you know, in Ukraine, if we were talking about like state medicine, about like the medicine from our like government, our national hospitals and outpatient hospitals. So basically, it looks like pretty old buildings with pretty old reconstructions, and lots of them look like, I don't know, maybe some reconstruction was like 50 years ago or 40 years ago, even when there was like still Soviet Union in Ukraine. Yeah, it was like completely like new site, because of course we have some private medical centers and they are fancy and they look great and they have lots of different design and interior. But when you're like stepping into a state hospital in a state polyclinics building, that is something that you expect to see like something not really pleasant. I mean, like old reconstructions and pretty depressed atmosphere, I would say, something like that. But here it's like a completely new concept. I mean, everybody was talking about that. That looks like a private medical fancy facility and definitely not a state hospital. So that was pretty impressive. And we were excited to see that.
When we last spoke about this project on Flashpoint Ukraine about 3 months ago, you said that you would be spending the next 3 months until the opening trying to figure out how much demand there would be for mental health services. What have you learned up to the opening about the need for this kind of therapy?
Well, the need is incredibly big because every day we have more wounded people. Every day we have more missiles attacks, and every day we have, unfortunately, more funerals of our soldiers, even in our city. So it is obvious that people will need more help, more therapy, and more care for their mental health. That's why we are so proud of this project. If we talk about numbers, right now we are trying to reach 15,000 therapy sessions by the end of this year, and maybe something like 40,000 consultations in next year. So that will be adults, kids, families, and everyone that, I don't know, feels stress or anxiety of living under the conditions of war. So that's the numbers right now. I mean, it's pretty hard to predict because, you know, therapy sessions were not that popular before the war. I know it sounds like strange, but I mean, in Ukraine, people do not have that habit, you know, just to go and to see psychologists or people that will talk to them and will try to help them with their stress or their traumas. So that is something that we want to build as a culture also. We want to share this information that is okay to have to go to therapy. That doesn't mean that you have some like deep psycho problems, that it is absolutely normal to express your emotions, to find help, to find support. That is also one of the ways, one of the paths that we are trying to reach by this project.
How are the administrators of this center going to inform the public? How are they going to reach all the people who really need this kind of therapy?
Well, let's talk about how will they communicate. They already have a really big base of, first of all, our soldiers and the wounded soldiers, because lots of them are already, they have in rehabilitation in this Unbroken project. Their rehabilitation departments, they already are working with them. So they have these patients already. And of course, they have contacts of their families and their friends and relatives. And also, as this is this hospital and all this project is under the Lviv City Council, so they're providing a great job because they have lots of instruments for that. They have press, they have media attention, and of course, they are communicating with family doctors, and family doctors can prescribe, for example, or give the recommendation to go to this mental health center and get a therapy there. So, I mean, there will be like, I don't think that there will be like issue to inform people so they know that they could go there, because the information is all over the place. So I think we will have like even more people that would like to go there than it could provide the help by this moment, because right now it is not staffed till the end, like fully. Right now there's only 8 psychotherapists and psychiatrists are working there, so they're looking like to double these doctors, psychotherapists for example, and they're hiring right now, and they're looking for a new staff.
Well, Andriy Chemez, PR and marketing manager for Just Answer, thanks for talking to Flashpoint Ukraine, and best of luck with this project.
Thank you so much.
That brings us to the end of today's program. There's more VOA coverage of Ukraine 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and on our social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. On behalf of the Flashpoint Ukraine team, thank you for listening. I'm Michael Lippin. Good night from Washington.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.